You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Go 24/7 Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again today is Glenn West. Glenn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Just trying to catch up on some sleep from Hattiesburg, but it was a fun, entertaining weekend, and excited to talk some baseball and some football and touch on a little recruiting as well.
Yeah, it's full off-season mode right now, man. Yes. Full off-season. June 8th. It doesn't get much more off-season than that. I mean, especially when baseball's done. So
happy Warren Morris Day to all the LSU fans out there who know that this was the day that Warren Morris had his walk-off in the College World Series. So go about your day, giving some thanks to Warren Morris for that iconic moment.
Yeah, anything good happens, just say thank you, Warren.
Yes, just,
there you go. But yeah, it was not as happy as a weekend for LSU baseball, despite getting off to a 2-0 start, beating Kennesaw State, beating Southern Miss, and two pretty improbable wins. You know, coming back in the eighth inning against Kennesaw State to score 10 runs, coming back in the ninth inning against Southern Miss to win the game in the 10th. And then, you know, only had to beat Southern Miss once on Sunday night or on Monday afternoon. Couldn't get it done, lose 8-4, then 8-7. Really tough ending to the season for LSU. In the year, 40-22 overall, 17-13 in conference, which was fourth. And with all that being said, it was still, you know, some people think it was a disappointment. Some people don't. I mean, obviously you win the first two games, you expect to get out, but it's not always how it works. Glenn, just what did you think of the regional? We'll start with the regional first and then get to like big picture.
Yeah. So, I mean, context is everything. And I think from the regional, you know, just perspective, LSU was really playing with fire all weekend. I mean, you saw it in those first two games. It really took two hellacious comebacks in those first two games for them to have a chance. Quite honestly, and Jay Johnson mentioned it in the post game on Monday, their pitching really let them down this weekend. And I think that was kind of a consistent theme all weekend, starting with that Kennesaw State game. You know, you're down 11-4 heading into the eighth inning, and it takes, you know, a 10-run just masterclass performance from the offense to really get you back into that one. And then obviously the next night you're, you know, down 6-2 and against Southern Miss and a very good pitching staff. And, you know, your offense is able to kind of show some mental toughness there and get them back into that game and ultimately win an extra inning. So, you know, just from those first two games, I think the big takeaway was just, you know, offensively they showed a lot of growth, a lot of maturity from earlier this year. I think there was some great moments. You saw Cade Doty, Dylan Cruz, Josh Pearson all have really nice nights in those first couple of games. And, transitioning into those last two games, you really needed your pitching staff to step up. Obviously, you were going to be low on numbers, but this was also a staff that, you know, had relied heavily on its bullpen all season. I think one of the big things, you know, LSU was kind of taken away from this year is that, man, they need some traditional starters. They need a rotation of guys that they can really rely on in that starting group because, you know, you kind of saw it, you know, as guys like Riley Cooper got extended, Devin Fontenot got extended a little bit. They kind of ran out of gas. And I think, you know, Paul Gervais had to pitch those first two games at the end there in very high emotional situations. And then come, you know, Monday, he was just not himself. He wasn't the, you know, prototypical guy who can get you, you know, three quick outs and, you know, he really struggled there in that Monday performance as Southern Miss really kind of built up their lead. And, you know, just kind of jotted down some stats, you know, from the weekend. You know, he issued 17 walks throughout the weekend. You know, they had some really high scoring innings in those last two games, which really hurt them. You know, they scored, Southern Miss scored three in the sixth and on Sunday night, and they scored four in the seventh on Monday afternoon. And the big thing that we've kind of really talked about all season is, you know, you got to limit the big innings as much as possible. And, you know, LSU's pitching just wasn't able to do that and really hurt them and obviously helped lead to this kind of result. And, you know, just one other thing that I kind of noticed was that only two pitchers really got through three innings throughout the entire weekend. So you had Devin Fontenot's 3.1 innings on Friday night in that opener against Kennesaw State, which really helped them stay in that game or kind of keep the bleeding from getting overblown, getting it even worse. But, and then you had Ty Floyd the next day go six innings, and that was it. I mean, that was those were the two guys that got you some extended outings. Everybody else couldn't get out of the third or couldn't get you through three or four innings. It was just it had to be an accumulative effort, and it just wasn't something this pitching staff was able to do.
Yeah. The thing for me was, you look at it, they used 4, 4, 6, and 7 pitchers in all the games. And while that's not, you know, terribly uncommon for win or go home games, the one pitcher this year that had been consistent was Mikhail Hilliard for the most part, right? And right. So Friday, to only get 2.2 out of three innings out of him, that was like, okay, this is a little concerning. Obviously, they had the heroic comeback, but in theory, probably should have lost that game. And then you go into Southern Miss at the end, you have Mikhail Hilliard on the mound. You're like, okay, is this where it kind of separates itself? And you're like, this is where Mikhail Hilliard, who had done so well throughout the conference season just on Fridays, can he give them one more outing? And while I don't think he was bad, I mean, 2 earned runs, 5 hits in 3 full innings, it was obviously a short leash because of the situation they were in. And then you get to the bullpen. And while for a lot of the season, I did a story early in the year about how the ERA of the team was low. You know, I think it was top 20 in the country around there. And so it just never felt like, and I obviously defer to you in these baseball conversations, but just, it felt like, yeah, this can work in theory, but it just, you don't want to lean on it, you know? And there were times where throughout this weekend, you're like, not because the lineup wasn't producing, because it was, but it's just like, if the starter can't produce, especially if Mikhail Hilliard can't produce, you can't lean on him this much. Is that fair?
No, I think that's absolutely fair. And I think it kind of really put LSU in a little bit of a hole when, you know, Mikhail, I think, you know, you kind of walk into Friday night hoping Mikhail can get you through seven, you know, against a team like Kennesaw State. And so
to set it up.
Yeah, just to set it up for the weekend to kind of get a little bit more of your arms, just some added rest or some added just less stress, you know, in that kind of a game. And you know, look, they obviously weren't able to do that. I thought Mikhail pitched really well on Monday. There was a lot of, you know, Twitter going back and forth on whether or not, you know, they should have pulled him right there when he gave up that leadoff single in the third. But, you know, or I can't even remember the fourth, maybe I can't even remember. But they kind of went to an early hook on him. I think he got through about 60 pitches. And, you know, I think that was probably the plan coming in, just, you know, get them off to a fast start, which is something he was able to do. But, you know, look, I mean, I think they put a lot of stress on their arms earlier in the weekend, and you could tell that, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, hadn't really pitched in a lot of those high leverage situations before. I mean, you really think about it, you know, Fontenot, Ty Floyd, and Mikhail were really the only ones who pitched significant outings last year in the NCAA tournament. And then you had Riley Cooper coming over from Arizona. You had Bryce Collins coming over from Arizona. So that's five right there. And of those five, I mean, who kind of stood out? You know, I mean, Fontenot had that really nice night on Friday, but, you know, you kind of really needed that experience, I think, to kind of show their hand a little bit. And, you know, they just weren't able to get it done. And it was just, you know, I think it was just a common theme throughout the season. You know, you put a lot of stress on these guys, you know, just to kind of get you through the end of games. And I think a lot of that had kind of accumulated heading into the postseason. You saw it at times in the SEC tournament, even, where, you know, the staff just couldn't really quite get that last out. You saw it against Kentucky. You saw it in their loss earlier in the tournament as well. So it was just, I think just a big learning lesson for Jay Johnson, and something he really kind of relayed to us was, man, we can't go into next year like this with the pitching staff. You know, I think they're, you know, we'll get into the future here in a minute, but there's going to be some serious change coming to this staff. And I think it's, you know, deservedly so.
Yeah. Real quick, before we move on, we got to talk about the lineup real quick, the hitters. Obviously, they scored 32 runs in a regional. That's pretty good, unless if you're that Oklahoma State, Arkansas regional that had like 1,000 runs. But 32 runs in a regional, pretty good. Just what do you think overall of the bats and how they produced?
Yeah, I mean, look, offense was the highlight of the weekend. I thought, you know, time and time again, they came through in the clutch, and that was really, really important to see, because it was something you hadn't, you'd seen on and off really throughout the season, and you were wondering if it was going to translate into the postseason, and it really did. I mean, look, I'll never forget where I was sitting, you know, getting to watch those first two games and kind of having my game story written, you know, in the eighth inning, ninth inning range, and really just having to shift gears and just really completely, you know, scratch everything and kind of write, you know, a different story, because the offense just came through, you know, down the stretch. And, you know, I thought, you know, they showed great poise. Like I said, I thought Cruz had a really nice weekend. Doty was just, you know, coming off that shoulder injury, was just amazing. He had 3 home runs, I think, this weekend, and all of them were huge. I mean, that one on Friday, they cut it to 6-5 in the ninth inning against Southern Miss. Or that was Saturday. I can't. All these games are jumbling
together.
Yes. Yeah. Saturday, he had the 2-run homer. And that was really the moment where I think it clicked for the offense there, where they thought they could get back into that game. And you know, look, I thought Josh Pearson, the freshman, had a really nice weekend. Trey Morgan came up with some clutch hits. Mm-hmm. And look, I thought it was a really solid weekend at the plate. I think they did what they were supposed to do at the plate. Even getting themselves back into that game in the eighth inning with the Dugas home run on Monday, just clutch Gavin Dugas. I mean, that's what we saw all last year from him. And, you know, it was a shame that we weren't able to see that more this year because of the injury, but he's somebody that I think they hope to get back next year because of that injury, which would be huge. But, you know, they came in with the clutch swings when they needed them most. And, weren't able to cap it off on the ninth inning on Monday, but you know, I think there is enough of a sample size there to lead you to believe that this is an offense and a program that's really going to be built on how they swing the bats moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the future. But after this year, like I said, 40-22 overall, one inning away from us hosting a super regional at this point. Do you feel like Jay Johnson's first season? Just what are your overall thoughts? Do you feel like this kind of sets the floor for them moving forward?
I think so. I think it's the absolute bottom of the floor, to be honest with you. I think, you know, the expectations in Baton Rouge, you know, are always Omaha now. I mean, that's just kind of the mindset that the Skip Bertman era kind of put into the minds of LSU fans, and Paul Maneri did a nice job of carrying it on. You know, I think they reached Omaha 7 or 8 times under Maneri, or you know, maybe 5 or 6. I can't remember exactly, but they did a nice job during his era of really carrying that baton and giving themselves enough cracks at championships. And, you know, I think what we're learning now is that college baseball is really becoming just more national. I mean, there's just teams all over the country that can come in and kind of wow you. I mean, I was really shocked by Kennesaw State's bats, you know, on Friday night. I thought they were tremendous. And, you know, I mean, that's a Upper East team. I mean, that's a North.
And then they almost beat Southern Miss in that elimination game.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's always going to be those teams now that are going to give you some trouble with the big guys. And so I think that makes for a really competitive, you know, kind of sport moving forward, which is really exciting. And, but, you know, look, I think just in terms of the future of this program, that's going to be the floor. I mean, you got to be able to get to a regional in any way you can. And I think really the floor moving forward is being able to host. I mean, they haven't hosted in quite a few years now. They haven't hosted since, I think, 2019. which is now 3 years. And, you know, just obviously they had the COVID year and everything. Yeah. But, you know, you still – it's Baton Rouge. That's a venue that is set up to host. And so, you know, you want to have good seasons and be able to, you know, play in front of your fans. And I know that, you know, they got to 17 wins. I think that you were kind of on that bubble this year of being able to host. You were really close. And so – you know, I think that just kind of sets a benchmark for what you need to do every season moving forward here. And, you know, I think there's obviously a lot to really kind of dig into, but, you know, I think we're LSU's really set up and, you know, in a good spot here to really improve and get some good guys on campus next season and make another crack at it.
Yeah. You definitely get that feeling from Jay Johnson. Yeah. Last thing we can touch on real quick. There's five SEC teams in the Super Regionals. I'm looking at it right now.
I believe Tennessee,
Texas A&M.
Ole Miss is in there.
Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Auburn.
Yeah.
And then obviously you have Texas and OU in here, who some people already claim as SEC teams. But, yeah, I say that because the SEC is going to continue to be just a powerhouse here, right? Yeah. So the standards are going to continue to rise. And as we expect LSU to improve, the rest of the conference will continue to be this at that level. So I look at it from that perspective as it's kind of similar to basketball in a sense, right? Where it's like, all right, you know, you can be good, but you can't just be good in the SEC because you'll finish fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why it's so important, you know, to bring in some really talented guys. You know, they're bringing in the number one recruiting class in the country. I think, you know, there's a lot of optimism that a lot of those guys are going to get to campus. You know, just reading through some reports and everything, it looks like, you know, of the 13 pitchers signed, as many as 9 are going to show up to campus next year. Which is a lot of arms. That's a lot of high level arms that you're going to be bringing in. You obviously got some infield work to do, I think, with Kay Doty and Jacob Berry potentially moving on. I would expect Berry and Doty to both be, you know, first, second round picks this year, which, you know, would probably mean they're not going to be a part of the program next year, which means you could dip into the transfer portal, or you could certainly hope to fill those spots with some incoming freshmen. I know they're very high on a couple of their incoming freshmen guys, like Gavin Guidry, who's Louisiana Player of the Year, and Mikey Romero, who's a really talented infielder as well. Somebody they think can come in and play pretty immediately if he decides to come to school. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of maneuvering, I think, with this roster. It's going to be really interesting to see which of the guys stick around. I think obviously your Cruises, your Morgans, and your Pearsons are pretty locked in for next year as starters. But there's still going to be some deciding to do with the positional players, and there's a lot of veterans, you know, who obviously didn't have a great season or didn't have a lot of opportunity. Guys like Giovanni DiGiacomo, Drew Bianco. Guys who have been around the program for a while, who, you know, might be advised to hit the portal, might, you know, just to say, you know, hey, you know, baseball's baseball and I can go play anywhere. So, you know, that's I think everything's on the table outside of kind of those, you know, those three or four players that you really expect to be stars next year for you.
Real quick, departures, you mentioned Doty, you mentioned Berry. Is there anybody else off the top of your head?
There's some seniors, guys like Fontenot, guys like Hilliard, who have to move on. Yeah. They serve their time here, and I think they're going to be, you know, they'll be moving on to professional baseball somewhere. We'll see just how things fall in the draft. But those are two that kind of come to mind offhand. You know, I think there's going to be some decisions to make with the pitching staff just in terms of who you want to bring back from this staff. Yeah. I think, you know, Jay Johnson obviously is very, very keen on Riley Cooper, very keen on Bryce Collins, guys he had with him at Arizona. But there's going to be some decisions out there to make, too, for guys like Blake Money, for, you know, Ty Floyd. Do you bring Ty Floyd back with all these new pitchers coming in? So there's going to be some interesting conversations to have, and we'll certainly learn a lot more about the futures of those guys in the next couple weeks.
Yeah. just going through the roster right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's overall pretty young roster. I mean, Tyler McManus, senior. But hell, there's a lot of freshmen, sophomores. on here.
I mean, look, lots of, you know, the red shirt year really helped him. You know, I think, you know, he got a couple red shirt sophomores who technically could, I mean, technically Kay Doty could come back to school next year and still have that leverage after next year with the MLB. But I think he's going to be such a high draft pick that it's very unlikely that you'll see Kay Doty back. But,
yeah,
you know, a guy like Jordan Thompson, where does he fit in the future? Where does, you know, Alex Milazzo, the catcher who missed a good portion of this year, fit in with the future? Obviously a tremendous defensive catcher, but was still working on the bat when he, you know, went out with that injury. So lots of decisions to make. Eric Reselman, another guy, redshirt sophomore. Does he come back to school? He obviously would have that extra year of eligibility and that leverage, you know, to kind of play with the MLB next year. So wouldn't be surprised if Reselman comes back and gives you a solid arm out of the bullpen. But again, you know, these are all conversations that no doubt Jay Johnson is having with these players and should be, you know, talked about here in the next, you know, several weeks for sure.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Let's jump to football. I mentioned this off air before we started, and I was like, you know, I've been basically talking quarterback for the past 2 months. And so I feel like everybody knows my quarterback takes at this point. I feel like it's very open. I feel like Jaden Daniels still has a chance. I feel like Garrett Nussmeier still has a chance. But a lot of people want to say Miles Brennan is far and away the leader. I don't know if that's your take, but what are your overall thoughts on the quarterback situation? Let's talk through it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say that any quarterback is far and away the leader, I think, after spring. I mean, the way that they grade these quarterbacks, I think, is very interesting just because these quarterbacks do different things. And for a guy like Jaden Daniels, what you really saw in the spring was a guy who was working on his mechanics foot-wise and throwing-wise. And so you really didn't see a whole lot of him throwing the ball. I mean, I remember talking with you and a bunch of the other media guys that, man, he can really run, but when are we going to see him actually, you know, kind of air it out a little bit more? And, you know, he's such a mobile athlete and such a really terrific athlete that he provides a unique, you know, skill set for this group. And if he gets those mechanics under wraps and gets you know, some more confidence with throwing the ball in this offense and with these obviously dominant weapons they have around him, he certainly could end up, you know, winning this job and being a very prolific SEC kind of unique player, I think, in this conference next year. So definitely not out on Jaden Daniels. You just need to see more of it. I've been super impressed with Garrett Nussmeier. I think his jump really in 4 or 5 months has been really incredible, because last time we saw him in a game against Arkansas, he looked like a true freshman. I mean, he looked like a guy that was trying to do a little too much, you know, at times trying to make the home run play whenever he could and not really settling for what the defense gave him. And I think that's just something that comes with experience, and it comes with, you know, learning, you know, college defenses and how they operate. And so, you know, I do think he showed a lot of growth in spring. I thought he was really consistent in being able to find the open man. You know, you want to talk about, you know, MVPs for the spring game. Would say Nussmeier was far and away the best quarterback in the spring game. And he made some really nice throws, and he's really taken that year two leap that you would hope to see from a young quarterback like him. I absolutely believe he's in this race as well as we head into the fall. But, you know, I came away just really impressed with Miles Brennan. I mean, look, he's a guy who's battled, you know, injuries for 2 years in a row now, hasn't played in a game since 2020. And, you know, it doesn't really look like he hasn't been a quarterback that hadn't played in 2 years. I mean, he looked very confident. He looked very composed back there for much of the spring that we got to see. I mean, we got to see, you know, two full practices, and that includes, you know, 7-on-7, 11-on-11, and, you know, a lot of, you know, kind of individual drills with receivers. And he looked very comfortable in those situations. And if I had to peg a leader right now, I would say it was Brennan, just because he gives you that veteran presence. He gives you, I think you know what you get from Brennan a little bit more than with the other two guys at this point. But, you know, like I said, this is going to be a three-horse race well into the fall. I wouldn't expect you get a starter name maybe even until game week of the first week against Florida State. I mean, I think this is going to be one of those really tight, you know, quarterback battles, and it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out. And so, I mean, that's just kind of where I am. Is that, you know, kind of, you know, your thought process heading into fall?
It's really interesting. It's really complicated. At least in my mind, because every time we went to camp or every time we went to the spring practices, it felt like Jaden Daniels went out with the first team first, right? Yeah. It was like with the scrimmages we saw, the little inter-squad stuff where we couldn't have cameras out, nothing. It was Jaden Daniels was the first team quarterback, it felt like. So I was like, okay, obviously they bring him in. They want to get a good look at him. They've seen him as a starter at Arizona State for a couple years, so you want to see what you have here. Not saying Miles Brennan didn't get first team reps, but it was Daniels who went out first for the most part, right? And so then the spring game, Nussmeier looked great, looked the best, even you'd say. But Miles Brennan the whole time just felt like he was just steady.
Yeah.
Just steady every practice, every game, you know, all that stuff. So I left it with saying there, I've seen plenty of all three of these guys, and I still can't discern. And I don't think the coaching staff had discerned. At least that's what Brian Kelly said afterwards. The problem becomes for me, and I think I agree with you in that, like, I would have Brennan the leader at this point, just based on what we heard and we've seen, like, if you put that together. But it's not by much. Like, if I put, like, percentages on it or something, like, it would be, like, 40% to, like, 30% to, like, 20%. Like, I know that's only 90%, but that's about as good as I could do. Like, that's how I would –
10% Walker Howard.
Howard. Oh, yeah, there you go.
We'll give Walker some percentage in there.
Yeah, other 10%. There you go. It's really close to me. The problem is, and I think I want to real quickly get into what you said at the end there, is I don't think they have that much time to decide a leader, to decide a starting quarterback, because of how different they are. And I've beat that drum throughout the offseason as well, is with how different these guys are, you don't design your offense around Jaden Daniels the same way you designed it around Miles Brennan. And I know that's been said before, but it's really true. And so I think there's a lot of pressure on this coaching staff to enter August with a pretty good idea and then say, all right, like, let's say, you know, theoretically you enter fall camp and say, all right, Nussmeier, you're not getting the starting job. It's Daniels or Brennan. And we're going to decide this within the first week and a half. Like, by Thursday of week two, we're going to know. And so that way we have two and a half to three full weeks to prepare with this quarterback and to get everybody on the same page. I feel like that's the only real solution here. I don't think you can go into 4 days before the game and be like, well, you know, I think we'll see how we feel when we wake up on Sunday morning and roll there. It's just two different, three different offenses, really, if you throw Nussmeier in there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And just kind of to piggyback on what you said, you know, about, you know, Daniels getting the first team reps, a lot of the first team reps this summer. What I noticed was when he got the first team reps, what did we see him do a lot? It was just tuck the ball and run. Yeah. You know, we didn't see him throw the ball a lot. So you're absolutely right. I mean, look, they're going to need to to construct this offense around the guy that they think will get them the most success. And I think the guy, with what we've heard from, you know, from Kelly, from Denbrock, from all the guys we've talked to within the offense, they really want to, I know it's beating the, you know, horse over with a hammer or whatever the saying is, but they want to get the ball into their playmakers' hands, and who's going to get them the ball in their playmakers' hands. And I think the jury is still out right now on Jaden, if he can do that on a consistent basis.
Well, the question is, do they consider Jaden Daniels as one of those playmakers? And then the ball is in his hands a lot. So then that's what I'm saying. It's just a completely different offense at that point.
No, it's a completely different offense, but you do need to have that line of thinking is who's the guy that's going to be able to get the ball into Kayshon Boutte's hands? Yeah. Who's going to get the ball in Jack Besh's hands and let these guys make your plays for you? And, you know, if the answer is Jaden Daniels, then I think you have to have a good sense of that probably prior to game week. I think you're right about that, just because I think his style of play is just so different than what you're going to be asking from Nussmeier and Brennan. Not that Nussmeier and Brennan can't run, but you're not going to devise an offense or construct an offense around those two guys running. You're going to construct an offense around those two guys being able to maybe extend plays with your feet, but also to get the ball down the field and into the receiver's hands. So, I see where you're coming from that perspective. And if it's going to be Daniels, I think it allows you – it forces you to make that decision a little bit quicker. If it's not going to be Daniels, I think you can push it closer to game week, because I do think the play styles of Nussmeier and Brennan are applicable. They're similar in terms of what you're going to be asking them to do. So, I think, look, there's going to be so much conversation around this battle for the next several months. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun on our board, on our community, just getting good, you know, feedback from what they think. And I'm excited to get out there for fall camp though.
Did I ever tell you about the poll I ran after the spring game?
No, I don't think
So I asked who the starting quarterback was going to be for Florida State, like 30 minutes after the spring game.
Yeah.
And shockingly enough, it wasn't Nuss at that point, but we got about, I don't know, what was it, about 500 votes? No, it might've been more, but let's say about over 500 votes. And 77% went to Miles Brennan.
Wow.
18% went to Garrett Nussmeier. So then the other 5% went to Jaden Daniels. And yep. So that kind of tells you where the fans are at. That's where their head's at. It's like, it's got to be Brennan. It's got to be. And I do think a lot of that is because of those three games in the 2020 season where he was obviously – I don't want to say he was great. I don't think he was great. He was pretty good.
He did enough to win those two games they lost. Like they put up 34, 35 points in both of those games.
Yeah.
And Mississippi State just ran and threw all over you. And then Missouri did the exact same thing 2 weeks later. So, that was certainly not on the offense that they lost those two games.
Yeah. So anyways, that's an interesting tip that I always go back to, is that's, I feel like, where the fans are at this point, which I can see from a distance. Because, we both have Brennan as the leader in our minds. Obviously not by 77% to 18, but, you know, still that process. Right. You did an interesting story. We don't spend too long on this, but an interesting story on looking at the potential of the SEC moving to a 9-game conference schedule in the coming years. And I don't know when this would take place, probably 24, 25, whatever. But with a 9-game schedule, it would rotate three yearly games against the same three teams every year. So what are they going to tradition games or?
Yeah. So I think they have three consistent games every year. So three common opponents every year that you'd play every single season. And then rotate six with the other remaining, I guess, add Texas and
Oklahoma. A lot of teams. A lot of teams. So you rotate the rest. And so people are starting to think that that's probably where they're going to go. You know the rivalries. You know the feel of everything better than me. Obviously, adding Texas and Oklahoma changes things. But if you had to pick the three teams that you think are most likely – that LSU would be paired with in the coming years, out of these other 15 teams, who do you think they would be?
Okay, so there's the most likely, and then there's the my opinion. And
yeah.
the most likely that I could see is definitely Ole Miss. You got to have Ole Miss in there. That is a over 100-year rivalry that you just can't you can't get rid of that game every year. That's one you got to have in there. And then for me, Texas A&M and Alabama are the three that I feel like are the most likely. I mean, Alabama, just from a revenue, just from what you know you're going to get from you know viewership every year, that's going to be a game that is really just one of the most watched games of the season. It happens every year, and you know, in the last 10 years when LSU's only won once, it happens every year. I mean, it's just one of the most watched games ever. But for me personally, I would want to flip out either A&M or Alabama with Florida. I think the Florida matchup with LSU has become one of the more just more entertaining ones in all of college football. I mean, it's very underrated. I think LSU Florida, you know, I did the math on it. I think only three games in the last 15 years have been decided by more than one possession. I mean, this is a series that comes down to the last possession, who gets the ball last, who makes the plays in the end, who has a kicker that maybe can kick a field goal, like Cade York in the Fog, or you know, it's just such an entertaining matchup that I would have a hard time as a fan letting go of, you know, if I were, you know, just as an LSU fan, you know, just to let go of that game every year and only play it, you know, every two or three years. I think that would be a real shame for LSU fans. But, you know, again, every LSU fan has differing opinions. I mean, a lot of them want to see Arkansas in there, or a couple of them want to see Arkansas in there every year because of the boot, you know, the golden boot thing. But, you know, I'm kind of the opinion that, you know, hey, if you have this golden boot, why not do that every two or three years and make it more of a prestige, you know, kind of thing, you know, to hold on to for a couple of years instead of, you know, a yearly kind of deal where it doesn't have as much value. I think playing that game every two or three years would make a lot of sense. And so there's obviously a lot of differing opinions out there. We talked, well, Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated actually reported that LSU is one of the teams that's very much on board with the nine game, you know, schedule. With the three rotating or the three constant teams in there. So we'll see. I think there's still some division right there in the SEC of what this schedule will look like moving forward with Texas and Oklahoma in the mix. But, it's something you're going to have to make a decision on sooner than later, I think, just because there's going to be some urgency, I think, for those two programs to get into the conference very, very soon.
Yeah, no. I pulled up a article today just to bounce ideas off, just to see what other places had as their projections, you know, of permanent matchups. The little write-up it has for LSU is, it seems like LSU is everyone's rival, could easily be Ole Miss, Florida, Auburn, Alabama, Arkansas, A&M. And I mean, I agree. I feel like, and this, I might be misled on this, it feels like because LSU does have so many teams that it could potentially pair up with, I feel like the SEC in theory, just if I was putting it together, you just put all of the other teams first and then kind of see what's left in a sense. I know that sounds kind of bad, but you could easily be left with Alabama, Arkansas, A&M. Like, you could easily be left with Ole Miss. I just think you might have to take care of okay, OU has to play Texas. Texas has to play A&M. So Texas has to play A&M and Oklahoma already. And then, you know, you kind of just go from there. There's like certain ones you have to have, obviously, we know. And so with that being the case, once you settle that, then you can start looking at, all right, LSU, A&M makes a lot of sense. They're right.
I would just love to get LSU fans' perspective on potentially a Missouri or Vanderbilt kind of every year deal. What would be their thought process behind that? Because it's,
well, hell, what's the thought process if you have Alabama, Arkansas, A&M every year? That's not. I mean, obviously you expect LSU. Yes, will be on their caliber every single year as far as A&M, Arkansas, Alabama, or even if you swap out Arkansas for Ole Miss. You expect, like, even if there weren't these, you know, even if the schedule wasn't formatted this way, you'd still probably be in the same division or same pod with them. So it's not like you'd be avoiding them otherwise. But still, you get those three instead of a Missouri or a Vanderbilt or like a South Carolina. Team that maybe isn't, yeah, South Carolina, one of those teams, while you watch, you know, Georgia get South Carolina every year, obviously, or you watch other teams get easier schedule. Yeah, it's going to be really, really fascinating to see who they put LSU with for the permanent matchups and if they are permanent or if it's like, oh, we'll reevaluate this in 10 years or 8 years or
however long.
So
no, that's something that I think could be discussed too. Like you just mentioned, yeah, I mean, okay, we'll have three permanent teams for 10 years. All right, and then we'll see. We'll kind of reevaluate next 10 years and see if we want to change things up. So I think you can change anything. I mean, if they're changing the schedule, you can certainly change who your permanent team is down the line. So yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how all this kind of how it plays out. But I know we also kind of wanted to touch on one last thing. You obviously got a chance to go to a couple of the recruiting camps, some offensive line, defensive line stuff last weekend. Just like to get your thoughts on some guys that stood out. Obviously a lot of local guys obviously showed up, but any guys nationally that might have camped or that you were able to look at and then just kind of get a good feel on?
Yeah. As you know, this is my first camp for LSU, right. Because I moved here in August of last year. So it was a interesting experience for me, but, on Friday it was the offensive line, O-line, D-line camp. I thought a couple clear standouts. One who I did a story on was Charleston Collins, Charlie Collins for short. Man, he was amazing.
2024 guy, huh?
Yeah, 2024. A lot of these were 2024s. Yeah. 2024 from Arkansas. Arkansas is already in on him heavy. LSU offered him. All the schools there offered him. Louisiana Tech, Southern, you go down the list. But, I mean, talking to him for the story afterwards, he visited Ole Miss. I think he has an offer from Ole Miss now. He'll be at Bama. He might be at Bama today, I think, actually. He's going everywhere in the country. He'll be at Missouri, you know, of the weekend. It's like he'll have offers from every single school. He'll be that type of player. So we'll see. It's still early, 24, but Charleston Collins was definitely a guy who stood out. Got to see Brett Bordelon, obviously Bo Bordelon's brother. And there he's the 2025. He should be good in a couple years. You know, I don't like looking that far ahead, but – you know, that was a one who stood out. Ashton Funk from Katy Tompkins, Texas, for those who don't know. Brad Davis looked like he was very impressed with him. Then 2023, Tyler Johnson was someone who I wasn't overly impressed with, but you could tell the staff was trying to figure out quickly what he was capable of. So those are kind of the names from the O-line, D-line camps. Make sure I didn't miss anybody. And then the skill position one on Sunday was like four times as many kids, and it was outdoors instead of indoors, Glenn, which I know is a lot of fun. Just being out there.
97 index, huh?
Yeah, just being out there in the sun. Had to lather myself up in the sunscreen. So walk around there. And so, but Joe Sloan, I mean, the quarterbacks really were the main thing for me to focus on here. You had Michael Hawkins from Allen, Jaden Bradford, Cole Weaver. So there's a mixture of Texas and Louisiana guys. Mayberry, Mature.
Yeah, Mature was a guy they offered last year. I remember he was the guy that they came in for camp last year, and they offered him with the last coaching staff. So is he a guy that you think they're really keen on too?
I think Sloan got a good look at him. I mean, he obviously has the physical upside, 6'5". You know, he threw the ball well in theory, but the top guys were obviously to me, and I think to the coaching staff, because when they started, you know, cutting down reps and giving them to the better players, Jaden Bradford was one who really stood out from IMG in Florida. And then Michael Hawkins, like I said, from Allen, a powerhouse in Texas. I think those were probably the top two. Cole Weaver, I thought, was really good as well at 2024. All these are 2024s except for all of them are 2024s, all the ones I'll name. Daniel Beal from Catholic, I thought had a pretty good day, even if he doesn't have a ton of high major offers at this point. 2024, I think he could, you know, do well He has Shelton Sampson on his team too, so yeah, that'll help. But yeah, those are the quarterbacks. Devon Mitchell at tight end, 2025 from Allen. I mean, he's gonna be another one of those guys that just has offers from everywhere. He's gonna be a high 4-star guy at the very least. So, yeah, those were most of the names. Defensively, you know, you had Wardell Mack, 2024, Ashton Stamps, 2023, Jaden Perlot. I thought he had a really good day, 2025. Dixon Agoo, who it surprised me. I watched him on camp. You know, there's those guys that stand out at camp and you go and look them up. They might not have the offers that you expect or anything. Dixon Agoo, I thought, was great. Not saying that there's anything, you know, he doesn't have the high major offers that I expected though. You know, he go in there, he's got Louisiana Tech, Louisiana. He did pick up a Purdue offer. I liked what I saw from Dixon Agoo from Dutchtown.
Kind of what these camps are for too. I mean, you get out there and you play well and you perform well and coaches evaluate you and make you an offer. I mean, that's kind of how I think it works, you know, at this time of the year. So
yeah, that was most of, I'm trying to think, running backs. We were trying to decipher who was who because it was just so many kids there. We believe running back Jason Gabriel, pretty sure about Jason Gabriel, at running back from Louisiana. So yeah, that's pretty much the rundown of guys that stood out to me. We put all that out five days ago on Friday in VIP tidbits. And then on obviously Sunday VIP tidbits as well, but I don't mind sharing them now because they're like 3, 4, or 5 days old. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll be all hands on deck this weekend. We got a 7-on-7 camp on Friday that I think all three of us will be at. Me, Matt, yep, and Sonny will all be there. So we'll have a lot more content, a lot more stuff to be throwing at you guys for recruiting purposes over the next several days. And, of course, we'll be communicating as we get information on any football, baseball, basketball updates. Matt, was there anything else you kind of wanted to add or kind of throw back at us or anything?
No, we're still doing the basketball recruiting. I mean, just to real quick touch on basketball recruiting, I've been in contact with people and everything, and it's been a weird time because there was a lot of staff who while they were putting the class together and putting the team together, they hadn't fully moved in.
Yeah.
And so you had like, once they finished the class, there was like a week or so where they were like, okay, let's move into Baton Rouge. Like, let's actually get comfortable here. Let's like actually finish this.
So, yeah, having spoken with Matt McMahon, I think he was very much in that number. I think he was living in Airbnbs for a while, and
yeah,
they obviously have a couple young kids. They're going to move in this summer, so yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's get these guys situated before we start looking at next year. So
yeah, so then now they're looking at 23s and starting to figure all that out. The EYBL circuit and all the tournaments, AAU tournaments over the summer are going to be huge, so they'll decipher all that. But yeah, I think that's all we have for y'all today. We appreciate y'all joining us. You can follow us on Twitter at Go247. Check out the site at Go247.com. Become a subscriber if you're not already. $1 for the first month, 30% off annual. I believe we're running right now. Get access to our VIP boards, all the VIP intel when it happens, the day of. And yeah, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at @MatthewBruni_. Follow Glenn on Twitter at @GlennWest21. Subscribe to the channel if you're not already. Leave us a like, comment, share, all that good stuff. Leave us a 5-star rating and review if you're listening to the podcast. We appreciate y'all for joining us, and we'll talk to y'all later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.